I want to present Proverbs as in terms of what it is. Seems like there's a real echo to this. Turn down the high levels. Thank you. I don't want to just take Proverbs and tell you what I think they mean, but I want to give an interpretive framework. Proverbs is a very interesting book. It's one that is readily accessible to almost anyone to be profited from. And I'm sure you have all profited from the book of Proverbs. But there are some problems with how to handle Proverbs and some things that I've discovered that can be very helpful with respect to interpreting and applying Proverbs. And also with respect to making it really accessible. And this afternoon I'd like to share with you a way of designing your own study materials out of Proverbs, a way of gleaning out of Proverbs topical studies. And it's a Bible marking system that I either was told about or came up with somehow years and years ago. And have shared with classes and students, and so I want to share that with you. But first of all, let me just ask you, what are some of your favorite proverbs? If you don't know the verse, that's fine. You may just know the proverb. I'm just interested. Everybody has read in Proverbs at one time or another. Many of you may read Proverbs regularly. What are some of your favorite proverbs? 3, 5, and 6. Do you know it? You shall direct your path. A great, great promise and a great proverb. What are some others? Yes. Yes. Right. We're going to look at that our second session this morning, that whole section. Okay? Okay. Proverbs 8, with respect to wisdom there, all right. What else? What other proverbs? What kinds of things that are said in Proverbs would you appreciate it? What are some problems that you've run into in Proverbs? Yeah. All right. Right. It just seems like there's a contradiction. And that actually was one of the things that, in the history of the church, they debated as to whether or not Proverbs should be included in the canon because of that supposed contradiction. All right. Any other problems you've had with Proverbs? No? Okay. Yeah. A lot about the fool and a lot about the mouth in Proverbs, which is sometimes problematic when we have to try and apply it. Any other problems anybody has ever had with any Proverbs? Yeah. Well, what's the problem we have with that? Sometimes it seems like that doesn't work. And that's another issue we want to talk about is what Proverbs are saying and what Proverbs are not saying. And what I want to do is share with you some basic approach to Proverbs, and we'll talk about some Proverbs and some sections along the way. But I want to give you an understanding of what the book is, how it fits in the Bible, how it fits in ancient wisdom literature, some principles for interpreting it, so that you can more profitably use the book of Proverbs. Hopefully it will encourage you to go back into Proverbs if you have not been. It will make you excited about sharing Proverbs with people. It will give you some information about how you can take Proverbs and use it in your teaching, Sunday school, young people, children. And it's an extremely profitable book. But I don't want to just talk to you about the interpretation of certain proverbs. I want to help you learn how to mine the treasures that are here for yourself. If I were to tell you that I had discovered a gold mine south of town and nobody knows about it, and I'd be happy to take you down there to the gold mine with me and we'll all mine for gold, and a bunch of you decided, you know, he doesn't seem too much like a kook, we'll try it. We'll just see what's there. It's not that big a trip. And you went with me, and I found a hole in the ground, and I said, now there it is. There's gold down there. Here's some gold. Here's some gold I got out of there, and yeah, it looks like gold. And I said, but here's what I want to do. I'm going to go into the hole, and I'll get some gold, and I'll bring it out. So I'm gone for an hour, and you've eaten your lunch, and you're wondering where I am. And I come up, and I've got some little nuggets. There's about 10 of you there, and so I give some nuggets to somebody, and I say, now just stand there, and I'll go down, and I'll get you some more. And after a while, you would probably say, this isn't worth it. I wish you'd just show me how to mine the gold, and I'll go down there and do it myself. And that's what I want to do with you in Proverbs. It's far too vast a book to ever instruct in its totality. But it's a book that is readily accessible to the believer. And so I want to think about how it is that we can approach the book of Proverbs to give an understanding about what the book of Proverbs is. And from there, then, we'll look at some specific things. Now, I've given you an outline. There's room to take notes here. Some places I've just got, you know, stuff written in that I want to make sure we get. But I want to start with just thinking about wisdom literature in general that we find in the Bible and how it relates to other things that were happening at the time when this was all being written. And in the Bible, we find that we're dealing with a literary genre. Genre is just a fancy word for type. We know about music genres, types of music, different styles of music, if you want to use that. But this is something that many people in the ancient East were writing. And we have uncovered wisdom writing from Egypt, from Mesopotamia, not at the time of Solomon, actually 1,000, 2,000 years before Solomon. This type of literature was being written in terms of people thinking about how life works. And so it's a common ancient literary type, and two things were happening. One, instructions for successful living are being given. It's a very practical book. It tells us how to live. It tells us how to navigate through the things that we find in life. But the other thing that ancient wisdom literature did was contemplating the perplexities of human existence. And so we have both of these represented in the ancient Near East with respect to wisdom literature and represented in the Bible. And we need to think about how each one of them progresses. Now, we're not talking about the second one, perplexities of human existence, contemplated so much as we are in Proverbs, the first one, instructions for successful living. The books of wisdom in the Bible are Job, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes. These books obviously have to do with how life is to be lived, and two of them are of the contemplating the perplexities of human existence, namely Job and Ecclesiastes. And the other Proverbs is the very practical instructions for successful living. The Song of Solomon is included in wisdom literature of the Bible because it, on the surface, talks about how a relationship is to be carried out in marriage and therefore successful living with that respect. And some of the Psalms have wisdom aspects to them. Psalms that say, happy is the man who, and talk about what to do with your tongue and what to do with your time and so forth. There are wisdom elements in the Psalms, and so just being aware of that helps when you're reading through Psalms to know what's going on there. And so we're dealing with a very common literary style, but it has very specific aspects with respect to the Bible. Now, there are three dynamics that I want to just mention. First of all is this literary dynamic. We find that with respect to content, it's talking about universal issues, about living in general. And the same types of things that we find in the book of Proverbs, we find in other ancient wisdom literature, in Egyptian wisdom literature. Things with how to live in relationships in family, how to live in relationship to the king, how to speak and what to say and what not to say. And it's just universal issues, common everyday life issues, things that are going on, things that people face, and that's the content. So this is the one aspect. The other is form. And in form, there are two kinds of wisdom literature. There is the proverbial type of literature, and then there is speculative. The proverbial type of wisdom is what you find in the latter part of the book of Proverbs. We know that chapter 10, the whole character of the book changes. Some of the Psalms and parts of Ecclesiastes, and we'll talk about this just in a moment. And these are the short, little, pithy sayings, two-line sayings that give you some kernel of wisdom as to how to handle some part of life. And then there is the speculative wisdom, and this is what is going on in Job with these dialogues of how you handle suffering and what is going on with Job and what God is doing. The monologue of Ecclesiastes, where Solomon is looking at life from every aspect and trying to figure out what is the integrating key, and he's frustrated in that. And extended instruction in portions of Proverbs. So in form, we have two different things going on in the book of Proverbs. We do have some extended discussions about the general topic of wisdom and how it works and how it works from God's standpoint. But we also have the crisp little proverbial sayings that we find mostly in the latter part of Proverbs. So just be aware. Content-wise, we're talking about how you live on Monday morning and Thursday afternoon, as a friend of mine in Dallas used to say. It's how you deal with those specific issues of life, the nitty-gritty of life. It's not theoretical so much, it's how life really works. And in form, you have the speculations of what you're to do when life doesn't seem to be working. And then you have the very specific, here are things that you do in these situations. And we'll develop this a little bit more as we go through our session today. Now, there's also a personal dynamic with respect to wisdom literature. First of all, when we're looking at Proverbs, we have to remember that we're dealing with life skills. We're dealing with the skill of negotiating relationships, of negotiating situations, of pursuing ends, of making choices that turn out for our well-being rather than our destruction. Last night with the young people, we were talking about two paths, and Proverbs presents two paths. And one path leads to a full, rich experience of life, and the other path leads to all kinds of problems in life. But Proverbs is focusing upon the practical skill of living. We'll bring that out when we look at some of the words, when we look at the introduction to the book in our second session. First of all, just to show you some places where this word is used, the word wisdom or chokmah. In Exodus chapter 35, it's used of the skill that God gave to those who were to construct the tabernacle. You may not have thought of that being a wisdom word, but it is the word there, it's skill. In Jeremiah 10, it is used of the skill that goldsmiths have in crafting gold into jewelry or into implements of worship for the tabernacle and so forth. In Psalm 107 and verse 27, it is a word that is used of the skill that a mariner has in sailing the oceans and keeping a ship afloat and making it go in the right direction and so forth. I would dare say that you would want somebody of skill to pilot a ship that you were going to go on seas that could become dangerous and navigating long distances where you could get lost. You would want somebody with the utmost skill, navigational skills. And this word, chokmah, which is translated wisdom in Proverbs, is a word that is used in that context. In Jeremiah 9:17, it is used of women who are skilled in lamentation. In the ancient world, in the Old Testament world, people's expressed grief in outward ways. And there was apparently a way to learn this, to become skilled in it. And that word is used that way in Jeremiah. In Genesis 41, it's talking about magicians and soothsayers, both activities that God commands His nation and people not to be involved in. But there is a certain skill that these people have acquired. And so it is used in that regard. And in Isaiah chapter 10, it's used of military strategists and statesmen. The skill of deploying armies and of moving in battle and of moving in military expeditions and so forth. And in 1 Kings chapter 4, it's used of musicians. You can see that this word chokmah is used in a wide variety of contexts to talk about specific skill in practical areas of living. And I want to suggest that when we get to Proverbs and we see and talk about chokmah, wisdom, we are talking about a very practical skill. It has to do with living life, of living life tuned, so to speak. We sometimes might use that image, get up and, you know, tune yourself for the day, or I've got to fine-tune this situation. If you're in the business world, you're aware of issues that need to be worked out. There's an issue down in a certain department. We need to go in and we need to get that tuned up. You'd be applying the skills that you would have in management to some specific life situation. And that's what the basic idea of wisdom is, as it's presented in the book of Proverbs. Now, it's life skills, and it's also a living philosophy. It's a life philosophy, and it works on two levels. It works on the horizontal plane. I've already suggested this. Because one of the primary aspects in which Proverbs teaches is relationships within the family. It's relationships in those close family contacts. Also relationships, personal and social behavior in the community. And there's a lot in Proverbs on relationships. And that's what life is mostly about, isn't it? It's not just fighting with my razor every morning or getting my car to start. Those aren't the things that really get me down in life and really drag me in life. It's that person that I'm having trouble dealing with. It's this emotion that I'm having trouble expressing in a proper way. It's the control of my tongue. And that has to do with relationships with other people. So this is a key emphasis in Proverbs. There's relationship involved, horizontal, and also vertical. And the vertical relationship has to do with the fear of the Lord. The vertical relationship has to do with the fear of the Lord. And we find this, we'll look at this a little more closely in the second session, unless we have time to work it into this first one. But the fear of the Lord occurs a number of times in Proverbs. It occurs first in verse 7 of chapter 1. It occurs in chapter 9. Somebody mentioned that. And the fear of the Lord is like a pyramid. And the pyramid has a base, which is the foundation, and then it moves up. The base or the foundation of the concept of the fear of the Lord, which occurs not only in Proverbs, it occurs throughout the Old Testament as the description of a person, basically of a person's faith relationship, of a person's attitude toward the Lord. But it first of all has to do with an attitude or a disposition toward God. The word fear, and we'll look at this a little later, but the word fear has both a negative, a terrifying aspect, but also a positive aspect. It just looks at God as the Holy One, the one who is righteous, the one who is the one who has to judge sin, the one who has established the moral law of the universe, the one who is infinite, the one who is all-powerful. And when you think of that aspect of God, it is something that causes us naturally to take a step back and to say, oh my, I do not belong in the presence of this person. And that's a very natural and proper aspect of fearing God, is just to be impressed with His awesome holiness. But because God is good, and because God is loving, and because God has provided for our sin and provided for us to enter into His presence, we can also be drawn to Him in a positive sense. And both of those aspects are always present in the concept of the fear of the Lord. We should never treat God lightly, you know, the man upstairs, the big guy. That is so disrespectful. Because He is more than that. He is God Almighty. He is the Sovereign Lord. He is the Creator. He is the Holy One. But it doesn't mean that we cannot be related to Him. And so there is a familiarity that we can have with God with respect to an intimacy of relationship, because through the provision of His Son and the salvation in His Son, we can be drawn to Him and accepted by Him. And so the fear of the Lord is a unique term that has that dynamic, that has the tension of that which pushes us away, but that which pulls us forward. And it's only God who can allow us to live in that tension in a satisfying way. We do not shrink from God in terror like a dog cowering before a cruel master or a slave before a cruel owner. We're drawn to God, but we're drawn to Him as the Holy Father, as the Holy One. And so the basic aspect is that there's this basic attitude or disposition toward God. This should result in a behavior, in a certain behavior. And so the fear of the Lord is not simply a thought, it's not simply a concept, it's not simply an attitude. It is also something that works itself out in our behavior. If you truly respect someone, if as a child you truly think that your mom or dad is going to have consequences for actions, you'll be motivated to live or to act in a certain way. And that's part of what's involved there. And so if I really do understand who God is, and I really do respect Him for His sovereign awesomeness, that's going to have a direct effect on how I behave. And that is part of the fear of the Lord. There's very definitely a behavioral aspect there. And there are a couple of verses later on that will bring that out. And what that results then with respect to myself and my view of myself is a balance. I then have a balanced perspective of my human frailty and God's divine strength. So when I come to the book of Proverbs, I'm coming to it as something that gives me practical advice on how to live. It gives me how to develop the skill of dealing with life situations so that life goes more smoothly, and we'll unpack that some more. But I'm doing so under God's headship, under God's sovereignty. It's not something I can do on my own. It's something that I can only do in faith. I can only do out of a relationship with the God who has directed me and the God who has taught me such. And so the fear of the Lord has these aspects to it. And you can jot those down and meditate upon those as you run into various statements having to do with the fear of the Lord. So that's the personal dynamic. Now there's a universal dynamic to wisdom. A universal dynamic to wisdom. And it has to do with wisdom and creation. These are joined. Creation and wisdom literature is joined. And when we're reading wisdom literature, the assumption that is always there, that you always need to keep in mind, is that the world was created by a wise God. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 19. The Lord by wisdom founded the earth. By understanding, He established the heavens. And just joining that with Psalm 104 and 24. O Lord, how manifest are your works, how manifold are your works. In wisdom you have made them all. The earth is full of your possessions, this great and wide sea in which are innumerable teeming things, living things, both small and great. Now, we're familiar with how God is glorified through thinking of creation, and how God is glorified when we recognize the intricacy of creation, and we talk about the wisdom built into creation. It is now popular to think with respect to origins and so forth and the whole evolution-creation debate to approach it from the standpoint of wise design. And if you see the design in creation and look at the intricacy of it, it lends evidence to the fact that there must have been a wise designer. And that's a perfectly proper way to approach this whole issue. And when we're talking about wisdom literature, we need to remember that it's by wisdom that God created the universe. And so there is going to be a connection here. And we need to see what that connection is. Because the second assumption is that God has built wisdom into the physical universe and into the social order. Let me read this verse from Job. And then I'll make a couple of comments about it. Job chapter 28, verse 25. I think that's what I want. Now, let me start at verse 22. God understands its way, verse 23, death and destruction. We have heard a report about it with our ears. God understands its way. He knows its place, for He looks to the ends of the earth and He sees under the whole heavens. To establish a weight for the wind and apportion the waters by measure. When He made a law for the rain and a path for the thunderbolt. Then He saw wisdom and declared it. He prepared it indeed. He searched it out. And to man He said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, to depart from evil is an understanding. It talks there about the law for rain and a path for the thunderbolt. And the connection, and there's been a lot written on this, and as you start looking for this, you'll see it in the Bible all over the place. But the connection here is that just as God has, in a very wise way, put together the physical universe, so that wisdom is also built into the moral, social universe. And the way this is most easily seen is to look at cultures that have really no concept of our God. To go to places where Christ has not been named and people are living in unbelief. There are still certain things that they do which are right out of the book of Proverbs. And certain things that they know should be practiced and shouldn't be practiced in order for their society to survive. Now, there are also things going on that are destructive. But the fact that over the course of the millennia, as human beings have been upon the earth, that societies and cultures haven't just completely destroyed themselves, all of them, is only because God has built into it certain moral laws. And those laws are detectable, if not fully obeyable outside of Christ, but they're still detectable because that's the way the world runs. And so what you need to think about and what you need to practice thinking about is the fact that the wisdom that we find in Proverbs with respect to how we treat each other is the same part, the same thing, it comes from the same area as the wisdom that the physical universe is put together by. And that's the reason that in Proverbs, he can say, now, look at the animals, or look at this, or consider the winds, and figure out what's going on. I wore a tie today so that I have something to hang this microphone on. But also, it has another purpose. And I'm going to kind of give you a challenge to figure out what this tie has to do with Proverbs today. So you can get up and look at it a little more closely, and I won't get too offended if you come up and stare at my tie. But it does have something to do with my consideration of Proverbs today, so I'll just leave you to figure that out. But all of life is connected. Both the physical universe and the way it's run and the way it runs and the moral social universe. And there is a connection there that comes out particularly in this book, in the book of Proverbs. And the other thing is that wisdom involves man's search for order. We want to know how things work. We want to know why things work. We want to know how one thing relates to another. This is given expression in a particularly poignant way in the book of Ecclesiastes, but we also see it very clearly in Proverbs. I'm not sure Proverbs 26:13 is what I want there. The lazy man says there's a lion in the road and a fierce lion is in the streets. I don't think that's what I wanted there. I can't remember what it was. But the point is, and you know how it works, is that we like to know causes and effects. We like to figure out why things have happened. Just recently, you know, the elections in the United States, and I'm sure you had plenty of that up here, more than you wanted to see on the various news channels and so forth. But after the election, of course, it's why did it turn out this way? What happened? I mean, it's just naturally the way we are as human beings. The animal kingdom isn't like that. The squirrels don't get together on Monday morning and discuss, you know, the weekend's nut hunt. And why it was successful or why it wasn't successful. They just do it. And it's done. And they starve or they live through the winter. But human beings are analytical. We want to know why things happen. And what is the cause and effect relationship. And you know, how all things tie together. We want to know how it all works. How it all fits together. In the book of Proverbs and wisdom literature is working at that within the realm of the social, moral, interpersonal, relationship, aspects of living, this day-to-day grind. You know, I get up and I meet my wife, Kathy, and we have some words, and later on in the day she says, you know, I'm really upset. Uh-oh. Why are you upset? What did I say? What did I do? What didn't I do? What did I forget? What date is important that I just slipped my mind? I mean, there's just causes and effects. And we can't always see them, but sometimes we can. And so there's a cause and effect relationship working in the book of Proverbs. And so we need to see that it's connected with how God has designed the universe, and we naturally work in this area. We naturally think in these ways. Now, here's a statement which gives us an understanding of what the book of Proverbs is. Book of Proverbs is a collection of extended discourses and self-contained maxims, and we're going to talk more about both of those aspects of Proverbs. Discourses and maxims. We've got two different kinds of material in Proverbs, which has more or less self-confirming generalizations about how life works in God's world. Proverbs, like all ancient wisdom literature, is looking at life, it's analyzing life, it's just making observations. We talk about the law of gravity. We talk about the laws of thermodynamics. And it's not like somebody has come along and legislated that certain things will happen in the physical universe. What those are the observation of how certain things are always true in our physical universe. How when you apply certain principles with respect to motion and physics and so forth, that you can anticipate, you can predict the outcome. The laws of electromagnetism and the laws of electricity and all of that. I mean, we understand that, and that's why we have lights, and that's why we have heat, and the way we have it, instead of going out and cutting logs and lighting a fire and pushing the smoke out of the room. We understand how things work. And that's how Proverbs is designed as well. And they tend to be pretty much self-confirming. You speak a angry word, and you pretty much know that you're going to get a negative response. You speak a kind, thoughtful, encouraging word, and you can pretty much predict you're going to get a different kind of a response. That's the way life is. And so it pretty much, it says it, you say, yeah, that's the way it works. This is how I've experienced it. And they're designed to produce in the hearer a successful life experience. So what Proverbs is designed to do is to help us live the most profitable, in an emotional sense, even in a material sense, because there's a lot in Proverbs on work and work ethic and what you can expect if you're lazy, what you can expect if you're diligent. Relationships, how you can make your relationships life as smooth as possible, as profitable as possible, as helpful as possible. How you can generate the best in other people. How you can receive the best from people. Proverbs talks about developing the skill that makes life run smoothly. But there's a qualification, and we'll talk about more about this afternoon as well. The qualification is to the extent that such an experience depends upon my choices and my actions. I don't control all things. Therefore, I cannot simply put a program in and make life work the way I want it to or the way it should. There are some things out of my control. But the things that are in my control, God says, here's how you act. Here's how you speak. And to the extent that you have anything to do about the outcome, here's what you can expect. And so Proverbs is intensely practical, though there is still the qualification that God ultimately is in control, and God is ultimately in control with the outcome. And so we will look at various aspects of this as we go through these sessions today. Now, just finally, let's think about the proverb itself. We're going to talk in the second session, look at the prologue, and it's going to be the extended admonition. But a lot of it is the short little saying, and we'll introduce that right now. The English word proverb comes from pro and verb or verba, and it's Latin, which means instead of many words. So by definition, a proverb is a short saying that is put for a long sentence or a long thought, or maybe a whole paragraph. And so it's a short, little, pithy. Now, I had students just recently ask, what's pithy? It's just, what is pithy? What is it? It's Yeah, it is, but what is a pithy saying? I don't know. Okay, I'll come up with another word. It's a maxim, okay? It's a maxim. For instance, a stitch in time saves nine is a maxim. Now, what's a maxim? Well, it's a saying that is compact, that is memorable, and that is transferable. So a proverb, a maxim, is a short saying, so it's compact. It's memorable because it gives you an image that just sticks there, and it's transferable. Now, let's take that little saying, a stitch in time saves nine. What am I talking about? There's a clue here. What am I talking about? A stitch in time saves nine. What realm does that come from literally? Sewing. And what does it mean? Okay, if you got a little hole, if my shirt pocket started to tear and it just came loose right there at the corner, all right, and I see that, and I say, oh my, a stitch has come out. I should fix that. And that's what I'd do. And I'd look down every day and I'd say, I should fix that. And 2 months later, I should fix that. And by there, it's clear down to here, all right? Yeah. So if I would just fix it, the first time I said, I should fix it, it would take one stitch. And that would save me having to put in a whole row of stitches because I didn't take care of it. All right? Now, how many other areas can you apply that in? Can you think of to apply that in? Give me some examples. It's obviously talking about taking care of something immediately so that you don't have to take a small problem immediately, so you don't have to take a bigger problem later on. Somebody give me some examples. Yeah. And it's far more difficult. Good. Okay, and there's the interpersonal relationship. Any others where you'd apply it? In any area? Yeah. Do what? Yeah, and you remember the Fram oil filter commercial that it ran here? Pay me now or pay me later. You know, buy this $3-4 air, you know, oil filter or, you know, replace your engine. Good. Good example. Give me another one. Okay, one shingle comes loose, it flaps in the wind, fix it so it doesn't flap the whole section off. Good. Another one. No more? No more? Oh, okay. Yeah, all right. Nail in the horseshoe, horseshoe came off in the horse's foot and lost the horse, you lost the battle. And okay, good. Yeah. So that's what a proverb is, and that's how it works. That's how biblical proverbs work. It's a compact, memorable, transferable saying that has to do with just the practical skill of living. Like a stitch in time saves nine. Now, here's one that I heard a friend say all the time when I was growing up. I thought it was my dad, but he later told me, no, he didn't say that. But my friend used to say, even a blind pig finds an acorn once in a while. Somebody said, well, she really should be a blind squirrel. Probably, but he used to say, even a blind pig finds an acorn once in a while. What context would that be used in? Well, he used to use it in a negative sense, okay? Somebody comes up and says, look, I got an A on my paper. And the friend says, well, even a blind pig finds an acorn once in a while. What are they saying? She just lucked out. You know, it's a put down, isn't it? Okay? You know? So, they work in all kinds of different ways. But that's what a proverb is. It's a maxim, it's compact, memorable, transferable. And we will talk about how that works in biblical proverbs. But there's also the extended instruction. The first nine chapters of Proverbs have a different character, different characteristic. And so we will think about what is going on in the first nine chapters of Proverbs And it's basically chapters 30 and 31 as well. And then we will think about just some principles for these short little sayings. But the book of Proverbs, again, it comes from ancient wisdom literature. It's something all people were doing. But the Bible, because it connects it to God's revelation, it connects it specifically to Him and to faith in Him, is a character. It's above all other kinds of wisdom literature working in this area. One of the illustrations that you can see of this, picking up some copying this morning at Office Depot, and I was looking at a book, and it's a book on management styles. Most recently done, I can't remember the authors, I can't even remember the title, but it was about a John Deere operation being turned around simply by a servant leader that came out. And really, all that is looking at how life works best with respect to how you treat people and using the way that people should be treated, want to be treated, and are designed to be treated in order to achieve the best result, in this case, in the business world. And that really is what wisdom is about, is figuring out how God has designed life to work best and applying it. The book of Proverbs gives us specific revelation as to how that works. We don't have to just discover it by trial and error, but it also tells us that there's a faith element in it. And so we will explore those issues as we proceed through. Okay, any questions on just clarification that we've looked at this morning? This is just a general introduction to wisdom literature. And now we want to start looking specifically at some interpretive principles, guidelines with respect to Proverbs that will help us even more unlock what is in the book. Any questions, clarification questions? Okay.